I'm John Wilson. Welcome to Owned and Operated. Twice a week, we talk about home service businesses. And if you're a home service entrepreneur, then this is going to be the show for you. We talk about our own business in residential plumbing, HVAC, and electric. And we also talk about business models that we just find interesting. Let's get into it.
Are you currently dumping money into the PPC pit of despair? Well, that's how I used to feel before I started working with Service Scalers. I would waste money with 2, 3, 4 other agencies. Then I started working with Service Scalers and they were able to drive meaningful leads in my business. They specialize in PPC, SEO, and LSA management. So if you're looking to increase meaningful leads in any of those areas, I would give them a shout out and see what they can do for you. Welcome back to Owned and Operated. Today we have a great episode. We are talking with Johannes Hawk, who is a owner of a artificial turf company out of Dallas and Austin and Salt Lake and a few other locations that we will dig in today. How's it going, Johannes?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course, man. We're really excited to have you. John's in a emergency. He will jump on here in a few minutes, and so we'll just get started with you. So we like to start off with your background. Tell us about where you came from, how you got into the industry you're in, and what are the next steps for you?
Yeah, happy to. So I was born and raised in Germany. Not sure if you knew about that, but born and raised in Germany. Came to the U.S. By running track. I ran track at the University of Texas. That was supposed to be an exchange semester, and here we are 10 years later. Kind of started my career on the finance side. Did banking and private equity, and then about 3 years ago, my business partner and I, who I met at the private equity firm, got the search bug. Kind of wanted to jump into the operations side. I had worked with a lot of kind of family-owned businesses, some in the home service space at the private equity fund, and frankly saw a bigger opportunity there than staying on the capital provider side. After you send a lot of big checks across the table, you wonder if you're sitting on the right side of it. So 3 years ago, did a self-funded partnered search and found this artificial turf installation business in Dallas that we bought almost 2 years ago, or a little over 2 years ago now. It's been a wild ride since then. We've expanded quite a bit, opened 2 new locations organically, and just closed our first add-on. Happy to dive in.
That's awesome. So let's start off with, how did you choose artificial turf? When people think of home services, that's not one of the big, giant ones that pops out, but it's definitely a unique one. How'd you end up there?
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't an area that we were looking at. I think from our perspective, we started with characteristics more so than anything in terms of the business, businesses that we were looking for. We had a pretty industry agnostic approach at the private equity firm we were at. We've done anything from technology, healthcare, home services, all across the board. So we were much more focused on characteristics than specific industries. And so I think what stuck out to us about turf when we came across it was, one, it was a relatively new industry. That's part of why it's not, as much talked about. Landscape and kind of pet turf, which is what we focus on, has only been around for about 20 years. So in a lot of markets, it's still very new, and customers don't even know about it. And I think the biggest factor was looking at reviews. I think if you've done any, or if you've spent any time in home services, if you can get your Google rating over like a 4, that's pretty good. There's always, the upset customers are the ones that write reviews, and the ones that are happy are just glad to move on with their life. And if you're a 4.5 rated turf company, you're doing terrible. Like the whole industry is just like between 4.5 and 5. And that's across the country. And so, when we dug into that, it was like, well, we probably don't have that much better craftsmen than any other home service industry. So it has to be the product. There has to be something about the product. And so did some market research, talked to, a lot of customers and started to figure out, okay, why is this such a good product market fit for a lot of people? And frankly, it's just, you know, most customers are, they're tired of not being able to use their backyard. You wait a long time with where home prices are today to finally get out of an apartment or a condo and into your home. And then you have some trees there and it's a dirt pit or a mud pit. And it destroys a lot of the upside of being a homeowner and the dream of being a homeowner. And so that's where Turf comes in. And we kind of give people that outdoor space back that they thought they were buying when they got a home. So it's really exciting. I think in a lot of home services, you deal with, you know, the HVAC unit broke or the mm-hmm. toilet isn't draining. And you're providing a service, but it's never a customer that's excited to see you. Whereas like, you know, for us, a lot of it is, you know, you do shake a lot of very grateful hands when the job is done and you see, you know, true excitement in the eyes.
Hey, you want to talk about somebody who's been in 100 degrees for 3 days. They are very excited to see you. That money is well appreciated when that toilet's overflowing and you're the one to come out and fix it. I'm telling you right now, but I do see where you're coming from. So walk us through the business model a little bit more. So for a lot of home service companies and even like B2B and others, you see a maintenance service large ticket sale where they kind of flow into each other. The maintenances flow into services, the services then are repairs, and then the repairs flow into these large tickets. Do you have any kind of reoccurring service behind the turf industry, or is it just more of a construction side where it's, hey, you get a big job here, big job there, school? And speaking of that, is it B2B or B2C mostly? Sorry, two questions.
Yeah, so it's a good question. So we do have a lot of kind of B2B customers we work with, other contractors, you know, schools, playground companies, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But also a pretty meaningful portion of just working directly with the homeowner. And I think we're much more similar to like a fencing, you know, roofing, siding, decking type company where it's you know, part of the premise is that you're not going to have to deal with your backyard for the next 15 years. So I can't really walk in there and say, hey, here's the service plan. Cause then you might as well, you know, stay with your real grass and your landscaper. Although for a lot of people, it's just not an option. Like we get a lot of calls that like, I've resodded my yard 3 times. I'm just done with it. Like fix it.
The idea is to get rid of the landscaping service plan, right?
Yes, exactly. And so I do think it is a little bit of a different underwriting when you look at the business, and also a little bit different of in terms of how you run the business compared to, you know, a pest control or, you know, a lawn mowing type business where it's, yeah, we have our routes and we, you know, you look at route density and those aspects. Whereas for us, it's certainly lead generation and more kind of macro environments, and maybe not macro environments, but more so like the local environment, right? So like one of the reasons we like Dallas a lot is because, you know, people are moving to Dallas. We have a great underlying trend there in terms of new homes getting built. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a chance there, people moving to Texas. So that's a great underlying trend. We have the big adoption trend. So if you look at, you know, California, or you know, Phoenix, Vegas, those areas that have had turf for quite a bit longer than our core markets, you're looking at probably, you know, 20 out of 100 homes have turf. When we bought the company in Dallas, it was like less than 1 in 100. And so you have that as a tailwind. And so you have to look more at, you know, what are the demand drivers and what share of that revenue can I capture, rather than a, you know, it's not a recurring revenue business in the traditional sense like software would be.
And so when you're thinking about those trends and you're thinking about marketing, I mean, you obviously opened up to multiple locations. What, in terms of some of the numbers, what does that look like, right? So you're spending, you know, $100 customer acquisition cost or lead generation cost, and then you're selling on average, what, a $15,000 ticket. What does some of the numbers look like for our listeners out there in the turf industry?
Yeah, so I think it varies a lot depending on the market, right? I think and it varies a lot depending on your company, right? So if you were one of the early players in a market, you might have a website that ranks well and people find you organically. You might have you know, relationships that are well established, versus if you're the 30th, 40th turf company in Phoenix, you're probably, not getting a lot of organic visibility, and you're going to have to spend a lot on paid marketing. And so I think for us, it's I know John put out kind of like a home service marketing guide, right? We do a lot of similar things like that. I think all the regular, your Google My Business listing, your website, all those aspects are an area that we're heavily focused on. Don't want to get like into exact margins.
No worries.
I would say, yeah. No,
don't give away the secret sauce. We don't want the secret sauce. Just like very high level general.
Yeah, no, I think it's large ticket items, right? I think you're right in terms of like $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 type jobs, and so you can have customer acquisition costs of $500, $1,000, even $1,500, depending on your market. I think what's the area that people like should spend more time on or understand more is most people in our industry and probably frankly yours and across home service don't know what their customer acquisition cost is. And I think that's a big factor. So for us, we spend a lot of time on making sure we know where each lead comes from. So we have different types of call tracking, like CallRail is one of those products that I think every home service company should have. We have UTM trackers on any which way that someone can go through the web and like find us, right? I want to know if you started out on Facebook, then went to the website, then submitted a lead form. And so I think that was one of the big revelations to us. It's when people say, oh, I spend 2%, 5%, 10% of revenue on marketing, that's not good enough, like as an operator. Like you need to know, I spend X amount of dollars on radio ads and I make X amount of revenue from radio ads and vice versa. And whether that's different phone numbers or whatever it is.
What CRM system are you using to track that? So like we talk about ServiceTitan a lot and ServiceTitan does an amazing job. We can dictate which phone numbers are generating which thing. And there's specific things for our call center to add and say like, hey, this was from here, this was from here. And so we're really easily able to do that. What systems are you using for your, because you're not really doing service or maintenance. So is it just like what services are available to you?
Yeah, it's funny. We reached out to ServiceTitan when we first bought the business because that's the one that I was familiar with too. And they're like, we won't even offer you to buy ServiceTitan.
You're not a good choice.
That was incredible. I never been like, would you like my money? And they're like, no, thank you. We're good. So they sent us to the Aspire side, which is the landscaping side, but that's not a good fit for us either. So the system we're currently using is Workies. I think people use House Call Pro, people use Jobber. Like, I think all those systems are kind of fine. There's not really one that is like solved all your problems. In terms of tracking, we do a lot of that kind of more manually, more in-house. So we have some automations that pull together reports of like essentially a database of here's all the leads, here's where each lead came from. And then, we have a tracking field where like we taught our appointment setters and everyone to like identify where a lead comes from. And then quarterly, we go through and kind of check those two databases against each other. So like I look at what our internal system says and what our lead Bible says, and then I make sure that that's all updated. And that probably sounds like a lot of work and a lot of like verification.
That was my next question. Yeah. So my next question was more so, right? So understandable, right? That makes sense. It's very easy to do. But moving now, right? You're going from one location, and so we jump back in the time machine, go back a few years. Now you're buying a second, your third, fourth location, and now you're really thinking about this expansion. How are you thinking about that process as you move into expansion? Is it single location? Are you moving call center into a one giant call center that's calling out or taking calls from all the locations? What are the processes you're putting in place now that you're growing so rapidly?
Yeah, great question. And maybe just for quick background for anyone that isn't as familiar with our story. So we bought the business in Dallas about 2 years ago. And then we opened Austin last year, Atlanta this year, and we're kind of on an expansion course there of 2 to 3 new locations a year. And we started also buying other installers as well. So this is kind of a pivotal moment for us where we've had to think about, okay, we built the process and the systems to a certain standard, and now we have to like how probably every operator eventually runs into that. You build systems for a certain scale and then you reach that scale and then you have to retool everything again.
We call it the oh shit point. The oh shit point in HVAC and plumbing is 10 million. You build all these processes to get up to 10 million. And then the minute that you hit the 10 million mark, everything breaks and you have to redo it all over again to get to 30. So is that what you're running into now?
Yeah, no, it's exactly what we're running into. So we started, the good thing is we started building processes and systems from day one that were scalable for the individual location. So I think that's the first thing that people should figure out. Like when we bought the business, we were scheduling on a whiteboard and it was literally like, you know, add two more crews and the whiteboard is too small. So the classic example. And like, I think one thing that people always underestimate is like a lot of these like pen and paper and whiteboard type processes that small businesses have are incredibly efficient. Like people are like, oh, how could you still do this in the 21st century? And then anyone that's bought a business and gone in is like, oh, like there's actually a lot of thought that like led into like this being the system. And so that's why a lot of times, you know, getting the first step of actually having, you know, some online system, something like that it can be quite painful to get there. But so that was a good first step for us was make sure that the individual location can scale indefinitely. So that was the first part. And then once we started expanding to new locations, it became, okay, now we have to build a system for managing multi-locations. So we started out building the shared service center that you mentioned. We started out building the call center. We're, you know, integrating the back end in terms of accounting, payroll, insurance, right? All the kind of admin and overhead type stuff. And so that's the process that we're in right now. So like we had the classic, a phone provider was like, you add a new location. You're like, oh, you can't do that with the current plan. Right now you're like figuring all that stuff. So we're exactly at the point that you're talking about. And then the second piece of that is, one is on the system side. And then the other piece is obviously on the people side. Right. And it's always easy to feel like, oh, well, you know, the extra crew, that's just like, what one extra thing for payroll and for whatever. And then they're like, well, but it turns out because it's a different EIN or a different like city, there's like a lot more work there. Right. And so that's the other thing that we're working backward from right now is, okay, let's look 3-4 years in the future. What do we want the organization to look like? And what do we want like the location count and revenue to look like? And then work back and see, okay, let's build a system then.
So what is that? Are you able to say what is the pie in the sky goal that you guys are kind of targeting for that 5-year plan? I know we spoke offline, so I'm cheating a little bit, but like where do you feel comfortable telling us like what are your goals over the next 5 years with this business?
Yeah, so I think we can say that the goal is to get to 50. That's both through our organic and acquisition. So I think that's also a piece where people, it's easy to say a big number and to just buy existing businesses that are big, right? So like that doesn't create any value, right? Like just because you buy a business that's worth 10 for 10, you haven't created any value yet, right? And so, but that's the goal. I think we think that at that scale, it becomes a different business than just like a local installer. Mm-hmm. At that point, you have
national brand. You got some enterprise value in that national brand. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm really curious. Is there, I mean, we've talked to, you know, Kenzie who had working on pool roll-ups, and there's HVAC and plumbing roll-ups, which we all know about. Are there roll-ups in this industry, in the turf industry, or is it PE backed, or is there any competition that you're looking at as you grow to that 50 million mark, or at least becoming an acquisition target?
Yeah, I don't think at this point there is a national platform. There definitely isn't anything on the level of the typical PE platforms that, you know, we all know that the Alpines of the world and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're the first. First roll up technically. That's neat.
There certainly is a goal of becoming the, you know, kind of the poster child for that, where it's like, okay, for anyone that's like, oh, we like this industry, how do we make, replicate that play in this industry to be one of the attractive targets for someone like that? There is some local guys regional guys where folks are doing something similar to that. But I think it's mostly due to the industry just being young. Like every year, like all the existing players are growing, and it just wasn't a big enough market, I think, historically to where it made sense. But I think if you go 5-10 years in the future, it will become that. And you have it on the manufacturer and distributor side. They're all very heavily PE owned. There's kind of four big conglomerates that run most of the manufacturing and distribution. And so that's the same thing that happened in HVAC and in roofing, right? It eventually goes down from like the manufacturers to the distributors and then eventually into the installers.
Hey, this episode is sponsored by Service Scalers. So Service Scalers is actually a brand that I've used personally with our companies for a little bit over a year now. They've helped us manage our digital advertising. Frankly, they did a lot better than our last agency. Leads went through the roof and cost per click went way down. Check out Service Scalers if you're a plumbing, HVAC, or electrical home service company. That's what they knock out of the park, and they did a great job for me.
Yeah, they want to own the entire supply chain and then move vertically into your industry. That's really neat. And so now that you're kind of getting to a point where you're breaking the oh shit levels and excuse the language, but you're busting through these caps and now you have to rethink what, as you move into your fifth, your sixth, your seventh market, what is your big driver to get to that next point?
You're saying in terms of revenue or in terms of like...
I'm saying in terms of like what systems and processes are you thinking of right now as, you know, you're a $10, $15, $25,000 company or $25 million company, and to get to that $50 million to 2X, what processes are you putting in place now? People, systems, what are you focused on? What's your big rock, your boulder that you're trying to move?
Yeah, I think the most important question you have to solve when you're kind of crossing that threshold is you have to start managing managers and coming up with a system that works well there. Where like I think up until this point, any question that came up, there didn't need to be a meeting. There didn't need to be a standing time, because it was just call me, right? If something happens, call me and we'll figure it out on the spot. And so we're just kind of running out of time for our day, for my partner and I, where you add another 3, 4, 5 locations. There's only so many hours in the day. And so I think getting that part right, where we provide all the support that we can to each location, while at the same time not, kind of removing ourselves enough from the day to day to where we can look at the bigger picture and make sure that each location is taken care of, is probably the biggest problem we have to solve. And so I think that comes down to, it's a little bit different job now, right? Like now you're training people to manage people rather than training individual contributors. And so I think a lot of that is looking at, what in our current company, the GMs that are really good, the folks that are managing things that are really good, what can we learn from them in terms of implementing similar like systems, processes, like rules with new locations and other locations that we buy. So I think figuring out that side is going to be, if we can get that piece right, that's going to determine where we stand in 3, 4, 5 years.
And are you considering these people C-level suite or how are you thinking about those positions or where are they coming from?
Yeah, so I think for us right now, the biggest thing is going to be one, getting the GM positions right. So we're running, each location is going to have their own GM.
True GMs, like P&L ownership as well as management or just ops management?
Kind of a mix. I would say true GMs in the sense of like anything that happens at location is in their responsibility and authority. Mm-hmm. But then there's going to be some things like, you can't pick a different field service management system, right? You're going to have to run them on the one that we have as a company. So there's a couple of like company-wide things, but I definitely want I think if you lose the local nimbleness, you're going to lose to the local guys, right? And so we want to like have as much authority and responsibility locally as we can, and then just use the back office to essentially enable those folks to be successful in the market. So they're not C-suite. And then I think the other piece is like we right now we still have a lot of responsibility on the, you know, kind of like not operational side, but on the admin side, right? It's like if we buy a new truck, we decide to buy a new truck and we buy the new truck, right? Okay. And so I think it comes down to like what we need to find the people that are kind of going to help us in like insurance, truck management, all these things that used to not be real roles, right? Like when we bought the business, there was like five trucks. So like you can't have someone that manages vehicle. So then, you know, we want to set it up. So in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, someone else at a C-level could manage the business. And it's not just like us that have, you know, all the 500 passwords to 400 mm-hmm, different things mm-hmm. and that type of situation. So not saying that that's necessarily the way we're going, but I think it's, you know, it's always good practice in business to make sure that you even as the operator are replaceable, and it's your job to optimize and improve the business to that place. So, you know, because you never know what can happen. So.
Yeah, that's neat. And so it's very interesting. So there's a lot of similarities, right? We all have in-home services. What we found out as we've interviewed, you know, 10, 15, 20, 100 people is that all the problems are kind of linear in the sense that you start to grow beyond a certain point. You have a fleet manager. You start to have a marketing manager. You start to have this finance issue. And so an HR issue, and all these people kind of go into the space. But what I find interesting about your business is that right at each location, you're able to generate, I think, since you're just doing the installation, do you know what the average, like, what does a truck produce out of your company? Just before I finish this thought. So,
it's not, we use a lot of subcontractors, so we don't really track it on that level. Thankfully we don't have a massive fleet. I mean, every time I get an insurance renewal, I'm grateful for every truck that I don't have. So for us, it's we look at it more on a crew level, and then that again can vary very widely from, you know, if you have seasonal, non-seasonal. I think a crew can install anywhere from $500,000 to $2 million a year. So it could, you know, it's a really wide range.
So I mean that's where the difference is. So you look at plumbing, HVAC, electrical, pressure washing. I mean, just across the board, most home service industries, each truck does about $300,000. A service truck will do $300,000 a year. But since you are not doing the service portion, your trucks are doing $500,000 to $2 million a year, or what we call it, a truck, but a crew who's working in that truck. So what is the revenue generation per, you know, group of people that you have grouped together? So when you look
at those, for you guys, it's per truck. Is that's usually one tech, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could have a helper, but
technically. So I think that's the big difference. Like a turf crew is somewhere between, you know, 3 on the low end to like 6 on the high end. So I think per head, it probably comes out to
relatively
a more
the same.
Similar amount.
Yeah, that's that. I'm glad it does, because that makes me always feel better. It's like, this is a fact about home services, is it will always do 300,000 no matter who it is or what industry it is. And so when as you grow these individual locations, though, I mean, right, you could potentially, are you looking at it from I'm really interested, because this is kind of where we're getting to these same questions, is are you viewing this as a, like, say, fleet manager, for example? Is this fleet manager position going to be in overlooking the entire company, all locations, versus individual fleet managers at the specific locations?
Yep. Yeah. So for us, like, that's kind of the goal of the shared service center, right? Is something like that should definitely be across the across the company.
Mm-hmm.
I think one big piece there for us is, like, you know, you can have an HVAC location in a major city that does 50, 60, 70 million of revenue. There is not a single city in the country where a turf company could ever get to that size.
Okay.
It's just, you know, if you go to Dallas, there's 4 million homes and 4 million HVAC units. There's not 4 million backyards of turf. And so I think having that understanding is like, Well, if you want to do shared service at all, you kind of have to generate revenue across cities and then centralize those decisions. So I think for someone that like is that size of an HVAC location, it might make sense to have a local fleet manager because that's the same amount of vehicles. Or for HVAC, it's going to be 5x, 10x the amount of vehicles.
Exactly.
That we have. But I think for me that the biggest thing that I want to have local is anything related to the install, anything related to the sale, like anything essentially related to the actual job itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there is a lot of opportunity. The call center doesn't need to be local. The insurance, the admin, the billing, all those things don't need to be local. So that's kind of how we separate the two. And that's also the only way to get enough scale to where a shared service center even makes sense.
Neat. You're expanding, you're trying to get to 50 million. Next steps, you're hiring a C-suite. Have you targeted any specific cities? Nashville, number one, ready to go?
Nashville is very high on the list.
Yeah.
We'll be there sooner than you know.
How are you choosing those cities? Like, what is the driver? Is it like, hey, it has to be in the South, it has to be a certain degree, no water? Like, what are the driving factors for the next locations that you're choosing?
Yeah, you're exactly on the right track, right? I don't think it's rocket science to mm-hmm. figure out which cities make sense in that regard. We look at search volumes as well. We look at local competition. So I think it's the classic. You look at the demand side, you look at the supply side, and you figure out if which markets make sense. Mm-hmm. I think in general, turf is kind of moving west to east with the exception of Florida. And so, I think generally east of the Rockies is our newer markets that are interesting. What I will say is that the landscape has shifted quite significantly, even from like the 2 to 3 years ago when we got into the industry. Like, I think when we got in, it was definitely still quite a bit newer, and it feels like the word is definitely out. So it's like more rare that you find major cities that don't have anyone doing it or don't have a local supplier or something like that. So I think it's gotten a lot more. Like, I think we got really, really lucky with timing on this one. I was in the same spot today, like mm-hmm. If I was offered to buy the company that we bought 2 years ago at that size today, I'd be a lot more cautious. So, better lucky than smart to a certain degree. So I think expansion wise, it's, you look at exactly those factors that you talked mm-hmm. about, and then, we try to open 2 to 3 a year, and kind of it's a little bit of a race to put flags into cities for sure.
Yeah, and so here's one last question regarding kind of where you're moving to or where you're kind of targeting in terms of market. So in HVAC, there's always I get asked a lot this question. It's, do you want to be a big fish in a small pond or a small fish in a big pond? And does that, what does that look like for turf? Do you need to be in a big pond because you need the extra volume, or can you own a really small 60, 80,000 household market?
I think if you are a single truck installer, you can, but it gets really like you can't have it's got to be you are the one who's selling and is doing the install. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity for that. Like, there is definitely a lot of markets where if you're one guy with your truck, you can make a great living. You're never going to have any competition. You're probably going to do a little bit more than turf. You're probably going to do pavers, decks, and turfs or something like that. You're probably going to mm-hmm. mold a little bit more into an outdoor living company. But I think there's a lot of places where that makes sense, where it doesn't make sense for us to go into, right? Like we're going to need to pay sales rep at least, right? We're going to need to pay the installers, all that stuff. And so there is definitely a level that week of market that is too small for us, where the individual guy with a truck can still make a great living.
Yeah, that's neat. I feel like that's the way the home service industries in general are going. It's you get these really big guys, or you get the really small ones, and the middle ones are getting bought up by people like you and me. So it's an interesting movement. I'm really interested in this market mostly because, like you said, it's a newer market. So you're missing out on, or not missing out, but it's just different in the sense of there's not the same like old generation that's retiring. And it's, I mean, if you started the business 10 years ago, 15 years ago at the beginning, and you were 30, I mean, you're 45 now. It's not like you're in your 70s and you have to retire. So it's an interesting market in general. So awesome. I appreciate you coming on today. I'm sorry John didn't get to make it. He must have tripped and fell down some stairs or something. Where can people find you?
A lot of places. So I'm on Twitter. That's, you know, how I find you guys.
Number one.
Exactly. I write a blog sometimes. It's called Buy Small, Sell High, where, and it's not regularly, but anytime I have something interesting that usually it's something that didn't make sense to me initially, and then I had an aha moment, and then I write it down so I don't forget about it. So I wrote a lot about, you know, kind of our search process, how we found the business, and kind of especially on the early side of buying a business is on that side. So that's a good way. Obviously, you know, LinkedIn, all the other platforms as well. Only other thing I'd say is we do invest in a lot of other searchers. So you know, I sit on, I love the space. I love you know, I think the, especially on the SBA funded side, you know, I think that signature is most of the or one of the most important signatures, other than your marriage certificate that you're probably ever going to make. And so I like being part of those kind of high stakes moments. And I sit on the board of a roofing company in Miami and like those kind of things. And so that's kind of that's 90% of our time is spent on this business. And the other 10 is focused on that. So especially if folks are listening to this and looking at making an acquisition or, you know, or further down the road or even early in the process, that's something that we always like to do is kind of give folks capital to get into the seat as well.
And so what's your Twitter handle? So I know on your Twitter when I looked that you could find that newsletter. What's the handle that people can find you at?
It's at Hawk Johannes, HOCKJOHANNES.
Well, Johannes, I really appreciate today. This was an awesome podcast. I had a lot of fun. And so for anyone listening, make sure to subscribe to Johannes's newsletter, our newsletter at ownedandoperated.com. You can catch us on the YouTube. We have some minis, some shorts, some fun stuff on there. So find us on YouTube, as well as in June, I believe 3rd to 6th, we are hosting our Breaking 5 Million conference. Take a look at it on the website. We'd love to have you, and have a good one. Appreciate y'all.
Thanks for tuning in to Owned and Operated, the podcast for home service entrepreneurs. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit the like button and subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to cover, feel free to reach out. You can find me on Twitter at Wilson Companies. I'll see you next time.